I still want Lane Kiffin to be the head coach of the LSU Tigers. I would adore it. I love his offense. I love his brashness. I love how bold he is, but there are quite a few downsides to it as well. So obviously the game that was played on Saturday that I got to attend, and I got to see so many different PHLers, I got to just see so many LSU fans. It was always so much fun to see that, and I was very joyous to see an LSU icon, Frank Wilson, get his first head coaching win for the LSU Tigers. So really excited about that. We're going to talk about the game. We're going to go through the PFF grades. We have a huge Michael Van Buren film study that will be released tomorrow. And obviously, as you can see, I am at Auntie's house. And you guys know, when we do Auntie House live streams, it always gets wild. She made me a smoothie a little bit earlier today. She also gave me some wonderful punch here. But I want to talk about price, right? Of course, you know, if you were to get Lane Kiffin, it would cost a pretty penny. Ole Miss does not want to lose him. Ole Miss is already paying him quite a chunk of money. But at the same time, we had this whole ordeal where there was some Florida insiders saying, hey, stuff could go down on Sunday. And that stuff could be anything, but the truth will remain the same. In the middle of a playoff run with the Ole Miss Rebels, which, by the way, winning a national championship at Ole Miss would be one of the biggest coaching feats ever in college football history. In fact, winning 10 games three separate times at Ole Miss in this super competitive SEC has been nothing short of incredible. Lane Kiffin was able to win the game with all the distractions, the governor of Florida being there, Ron DeSantis, and then, of course, obviously them winning that game. I do think a chunk of you want Lane Kiffin to be the LSU head coach. And by a chunk of you, that includes myself, like we just said a minute ago. I've always stayed the same. If Lane Kiffin was my number two candidate, and my candidates were pretty straightforward when it comes to tiers, and Lane Kiffin was in tier number one, he was candidate number two, how could I not still have him as an elite candidate when since then, he has been what he has been at Ole Miss, which is arguably the best coach in the SEC outside of Kirby Smart. So, you know, for me, I'm still in on the Lane train being the next head coach at LSU. Now, that's just my opinion. What exactly is happening? That's what a lot of you want to know. Well, I do think Lane, just judging by his actions, Ole Miss is hot right now. He would have already, to me, signed everything. Most of these coaches, when their names are brought up or when other jobs open up, freaking Matt Rhule, who's done nothing at Nebraska, absolutely nothing. Penn State opens up, Matt Rhule immediately signs a two-year extension. This would have already been signed, sealed, delivered. And with the way that Lane is answering questions up to this point, at this second, he could be signing an extension right now. We don't know. The truth still remains the same, y'all. We don't know what he's going to do. And that's okay. It is perfectly fine to be in that spot. But then again, LSU still does need a coach. Now, this then gets into the second name on the thumbnail image, which is Frank Wilson. Could you legitimately go into next season with Frank Wilson as the head coach of the LSU Tigers? The answer to that is yes. It could legitimately happen. You are being run right now by quite a few true and true Louisianians. All right, so you have a guy in Frank Wilson who is Louisiana through and through. He understands his program better than anyone. In fact, out of any candidate that is probably out there that is feasible right now, there's not a single one that loves LSU probably more than Frank Wilson. He did a great job coaching this team yesterday. But at the same time, don't let a single victory versus Arkansas, a one-point victory, that now that I've been able to cut 90% of my Michael Van Buren film study today, was very lucky. It was a very fortunate victory that we had yesterday. And guess what? I don't give a damn because I care more about this rivalry than most. This is the number one game on my schedule every single season. A lot of you know my connections to the natural state. I wanted to win this game by any stretch of the imagination. So even though my normal way of determining which team actually played better, which team deserved the result, if you will, even though Arkansas probably deserved the result more than LSU did, LSU won the damn game. So that's all that matters to me. And it also matters that Frank got his first victory. But, you know, when you look at that game as a whole, I do think it's important to make sure you're objective about it, which then lends itself to the second big topic, Michael Van Buren winning this game for us. What a performance from him. You know, he started off the game so poorly with the misfires, and he was clearly rattled, clearly fired up. And what to me was a big difference is anytime any offense has really bad offensive tackle play, your quarterback has to be mobile. And Michael Van Buren's mobility in many ways won us that game yesterday. And I think at this point, it's not necessarily a true knock on Garrett Nussmeier to say that we don't win this game if Michael Van Buren's not our quarterback. I don't think it's necessarily a knock at all. It's just the reality of it. LSU's offensive tackle play is so bad. And that continued yesterday versus Arkansas. Now, it wasn't as bad as it was in other games, but it's still not great. And you're a little bit more lenient to Kerryus Kern because he is a true freshman. But Van Buren was able to make it work and find a way to get the victory. Okay. Now, final thing, and we're going to get to every single one of your comments tonight. All right. We already got a few super chats flying in, and I'm really excited about that. Y'all, I've got to show this to you. I don't know how many more times I can watch this run. And I never just tweet out just clips, but this is what special is supposed to look like when you turn on the film. All right. This run by Harlan Berry. And for our audience listening to this, we won't do too much film study tonight. You have Thompson, who played a mostly fine game, get dominated by the DT. You see Harlan Berry make 88, miss in the hole, spreads the sing on out, and then you have some 22-on-22 action. Look at the vision right there. The juke him out of the shoes of the Arkansas safety, and he picks up the first down, and we end up getting a field goal and a two-minute drill after that run. We are witnessing something truly spectacular, and I also want to shout out Alex Atkins, who I think called a really, really, really good game. We are running a lot of stuff that we were not running beforehand. Well, I say that we're running a few different concepts. We weren't running a lot under Joe Sloan. It really isn't anything like truly, truly, truly new. But at the same time, you give Alex Atkins a lot of credit. He called a mostly great game yesterday. And you give Frank Wilson a lot of credit for calling up the trick plays that he indeed did call. And they were excellent. Okay. So really, really, really good stuff. But yes, I want to break down this game ad nauseum. I know a lot of you don't really care about the game. You're like, okay, we won. We're going bowling anyway. We're going to beat Western Kentucky, whatever. But now it is important to also acknowledge that Michael Van Buren is making a huge sacrifice for this team. And he's probably a bigger man than me or you to do this very thing. I know it doesn't sound like much, but this is mortality, your football mortality you're staring in the face, right? You could sit out these next two games, and it gives you a full year of earning opportunities, a full year of growth. You know, Garrett Nussmeier did this very thing. Even though it was only for one game, Van Buren would need to do it for two. And look, Van Buren really is in the same situation that Garrett Nussmeier's in. Brand new coaching staff, brand new regime, all those different things, interim coach, and at this point, now that Colin Hurley has left the program for personal reasons, you know, our backup quarterback is a walk-on, Emil Picarella. And Juwan Johnson also would be a backup, and we would probably do a lot of Wildcat stuff. I like Emil Picarella. I do. He's a local kid. He would be living the dream of all dreams. Okay? So I'm really, really, really excited about that. Okay? Let's go to LSU for life. He wants to start off here. This game didn't prove anything. Arkansas is terrible. Yeah, I just think that's a dumb comment. I really do think so. To say that it proves nothing is crazy to me. Like, there was nothing you could take away from that game. there's always something you could take away from every single game that you play. Now, if you want to make the comment, hey, you can't take too much away from it because this is the worst SEC team we have played all season. Sure, I could hear that out. And like I said, Arkansas probably should have won that football game. But they're Arkansas, and they choked things away, and we took advantage of the opportunities to go out there and win the game. Now, it would be disgusting for me to just talk about the offense if I did not talk about the defense for LSU stepping up in a major way. Jack Pyburn was fantastic, but there was two true superstars. And I wanted to shout out Jack first because obviously a big reason why I was at the game is that the Pyburn family hosted me at their tailgate, literally met pretty much everyone in Jack's entire family. And, you know, I serendipitously, I know I'm not saying that word correctly at all, I went to go sit with my parents, and the parents were sitting close to the players. Then I saw Jack's parents, and Jack's parents told me to come on down to the bottom railing. And Jack and I got to take a photo. You can see it for yourself on Twitter. So really cool stuff. Always fun to develop relationships with, you know, the players and their parents and all that stuff. But really, LSU won that game defensively because of two people, Harold Perkins and Montsor Delaney. And when your best players, and those are two of the most talented players that we have ever had, honestly, defensively at LSU, you know, Delaney's been elite from start to finish. Harold Perkins has not been, and Perk was truly elite yesterday. And thank God he was out there. When he plays Razorbacks, he's always going to play absolutely amazing football. And what a game from Harold yesterday. So we're going to get into some of the PFF grades, how PFF saw things. Did I see it the same way? And we're also going to talk about Western Kentucky, Oklahoma, the coaching search, and everything else under the sun. Okay? So we start off here with a super chat from Julie. Okay? You know, Julie and I were talking earlier today, and I'm sorry we couldn't. I love coming to Baton Rouge and link up with like the super-duper PHLers, and Julie is up there. She says, I feel like Lane is either going to Florida or staying at Ole Miss. I have zero thoughts on who really may be interested in LSU or who LSU may be targeting. You know, the good thing about Lane sucking up all this energy, if you will, and all this oxygen is that LSU really is able to conduct a huge smokescreen search, right? You had the Lincoln Riley smokescreen, and I've shared my role in that smokescreen indirectly a few years ago. But, you know, for me, I look at Lane Kiffin as a guy that would immediately make LSU a really good program. Back to where we are making the college football playoff at least two out of every three seasons. I think he immediately gets us to that point. Now, what I would also tell you is I am interested to see how Lane coaches these next couple of weeks. I really, really, really am. So one minor, and this is minor because I do think this is a bit of a statistical anomaly, because last year's Ole Miss team was so good. They were the number one power rated SEC team for me last year. For me. All right. So let me start off by saying, hey, I'm a big fan of Lane Kiffin. But for that team to have not made the playoffs last year was shocking. Very, very, very shocking. There was no excuses for it. But Lane lost all three of the close games that he actually played last year. One of those was at the hands of LSU and Garrett. And then he lost a game to Kentucky, who was terrible. And he lost to a very good Florida Gator team. And a lot of you would acknowledge that Florida, at the end of last year, was a top 25 team. But he didn't make the playoffs with that team. That team was re-freaking-diculous. That was... I don't think you could even make an argument to the contrary that they were not the best or at least the second best SEC team by the end of the season. And he couldn't get them there. So right now, Lane is doing a better job coaching this year's team, punching up with this year's team, All right, this is not a team that had any type of postseason aspirations, at least outside of Ole Miss. This is not that great of a roster. Offensively, they're pretty good. Tight end, they're probably better than what they were last year. But quarterback, they're slightly worse. Running back, they're better, definitely better there. Wide receiver, they're a little worse. And defensively, they're worse at all those positions. And they're only a one-loss team, and they have a really high chance of getting into the playoff. So now, if you come to LSU, if you're Lane Kiffin, does he, with true championship aspirations and expectations, can he meet that mark? Because I will tell you, I do think last year's Ole Miss team would have been competitive versus Ohio State and Oregon, who were by far to me the best teams in college football last season. So you then look at how Lane would fit in. Tre'Davious Green, that's probably a really good marriage there. And then obviously Harlan Berry would fit like a glove with the Lane Kiffin's offense. So it's fun to think about, all right? But now you got to get into a more interesting question. What happens if you don't? What if all of this LSU was never really after Lane Kiffin? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I always like to be straight up honest with each and every one of you. But I do think there is interest there. What if that doesn't work out? What name should we go after? Well, I am not totally opposed to going after a Group of Four coach. I'm just not. But I don't think that that excites a lot of you. So who would be a P4 coach that would interest you and would be worth the money to bring over here? Well, you start getting into different names like Eliah Drinkwitz. That would make a lot of sense. He knows the SEC. He knows that Missouri has limitations. But he's already getting paid a pretty penny, and he's the guy there. And the thing is, with a lot of these coaches you're going after, there are so many really good coaches in college football with teams with true playoff aspirations that did not do anything before they got there. Okay? So it's guys like Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri, Brent Key at Georgia Tech. What was Georgia Tech before Brent Key got there? They were not that good. They really were not. All right, they're okay, but they weren't ever as good as they are now with Haynes King and Brent Key. And then you have Kirk Cignetti at Indiana. And I know he's not part of the LSU search, but you get the picture, all right? So if I'm a guy who, like Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, the program was really not that great before I got there, then why would I leave a place that worships the ground that I walk on to go to a pressure cooker that is going to immediately expect me to turn in playoff results, especially after the most disappointing coach in recent memory at that school? Okay. So there you go. Jim Bernhard, who went to glory tonight, RIP. Let's go to Mike, who is at the game. Everyone is happy that LSU won. Yes, we got very lucky. And I'm glad you called me out about that, Mike. You indirectly called me out because special teams was so big for us. After the block punt, we dominated in special teams and had a plus 12 in terms of points when it comes to field goals. Okay, so Ramos hit three very long kicks, and Arkansas missed their kick. Okay, once again, I will say, and it goes back to the pushback I had a minute ago where a commenter said, hey, you can't learn anything from yesterday. No, you can learn some stuff. It's important to be positive in some aspects. But if you are caught up in the moment saying, hey, let's give Frank the keys to the kingdom, and because he won this a one-point game versus Arkansas, I would pump the brakes in a lot of different ways. We were very fortunate to have won that game. Very fortunate. But like I said, I don't really give a damn. Okay? Now, The next thing, we are in a state of flux when it comes to LSU football, because some of you have already turned the page to actual sports that aren't football. Sports that LSU is not out of the playoff picture yet. I know a lot of you are excited about LSU baseball. We're still a few weeks away from that, even though we're getting some scrimmages mixed in there. That's fun to see. LSU women's basketball, we know they're going to be great. I love the Charlotte trash talk. I think all of that's great. LSU men's basketball, that's going to be awesome this season. Kidding. I don't know. I'm ready to be hurt. I'm ready to be hurt. So, you know, the vibes are high. I spoke to an athletic department admin this weekend, and he said, Carter, the vibes in all the other sports are high. Because I asked him, I was like, hey, there's a transition. There's a new AD. And I'm like, yeah, we like Verge. We've known Verge. Even though he's more of a football guy, you know, if you work in the athletic department, you know who Verge Osbury is. So there's people excited about this new era. So we shall see what happens. Okay. Now, next thing. I want to talk about the state of college football. I really do. We look at the rest of college football. We look at some of these other SEC results. And one thing should really piss you off, whoever you are watching this right now. This would have been an amazing season for LSU to be a legitimate playoff team. Really think about that for a second. Okay. We did not have to play Georgia, who's the best team in the SEC. We did not have to play Tennessee, who's very good. We didn't. Okay. We didn't have to play Texas. They're good. We were able to miss out on quite a few of the better teams in the SEC. It looks as if Alabama is a little overvalued. We were in position to potentially make that game competitive. Now, I say all of that because I have slept on the rant that I had last night that wasn't as well received, because this is probably a little too much of a glass half full opinion of the Van Buren performance versus Arkansas. I do not think in 2025 we are a two-loss team right now with Michael Van Buren. I just don't think so. Because what I think that analysis takes out of the equation is the Clemson game, where Garrett actually did play really well. So would Michael Van Buren, in the very first start of the season for LSU, would he have outperformed Garrett Nussmeier in that game? I don't know. I don't know. But at the same time, this team, even though we put so much money into this team, was nothing with the coaching that we had this season. The coaching this season is still so diabolically bad. Now, when I say something like that, and I'm calling out people by their names and their livelihoods, I hate it when hot take artists don't actually provide specificity. And obviously, when you do this, you have hot takes. You have strong takes. You try to be compelling. You try to be as entertaining from Auntie's room here in the 225. Hell, I might just move in here. My wife's like, take your time. Me and the dog got the whole house to ourselves. We don't need your chubby, hairy ass back here at home. So I was like, okay. I'll stay at Auntie's house. We had a great Cajun pasta tonight. And we had Cajun pasta last night at my uncle's house. And tonight, we did some air-fried Cajun seasoned catfish. And she gave me an air fryer cookbook. I'm excited. But, you know, the one thing I keep going back to about this season in the SEC is that the teams that are winning are being so well coached. And what I think happened is across the Southeastern Conference, what do you see? Well, in basketball, in the SEC, It is the greatest collection of coaches, maybe in any conference ever. Now, I know here come the Big East guys coming in to trash me for that, but, you know, Jim Calhoun and Boeheim and all the people that are in the Big East, sure. But men's basketball coaching is ridiculous. There's so many Hall of Famers in there. Women's basketball coaching in the SEC became ridiculous. Baseball coaching in the SEC became ridiculous. And then football coaching in the SEC has also become ridiculous, all right? So what does that mean? Well, if the coaching across the way has gotten better and our coaching hasn't, you're getting bit in two different ways, all right? Number one, your coaching itself is not great. It's not great at all. But this is where it really hurts you, is that you're paying a lot for bad coaching. That's the thing. If I go to eat a meal, like, for instance, there used to be a place in Baton Rouge near LSU's campus that I love to go to named Pita Pit. It's close to the original Canes. I was like, okay, I haven't been to Pita Pit in 47 years. I've never actually driven in that shopping center in forever. I drive up to the Pita Pit. It wasn't open. All right. It was not open. I don't know how long it's been closed. I was sad. I used to love Pita Pit. But the thing I liked about Pita Pit was I was getting a very good pita at a very good price. I was getting elite coaching at an elite price. It wasn't too high. It wasn't too low. It was good. I was getting an Elijah Drinkowitz level meal. It's not the best, but it's very good. And, you know, it's what I used to eat all the time. I loved Pita Pit. Didn't know it closed now. Very sad stuff. Maybe a few other super chats, we can revive it next to the Buffalo Wild Wings. But the problem is we're paying for a supper club meal. And in return, we were getting 3 a.m. Jack in the Box, soggy tacos coaching. And that hurts because there has been so much better coaching in the SEC with far smaller salaries where that money could actually go to the players themselves, better players. And Brian Kelly did such a good job getting these off the field coaches. You know, there's a guy who actually, after the game, we actually rode in the back of his truck back to Clifton's house. He gave us a little ride so we can get to the post-game show sooner. And he was friends with Sam Petito, the assistant coach at LSU, off-the-field relationship builder recruiting guy, who was with Saban, won a championship with Ohio State, now he's with us now. He was talking about how impressive of a guy Sam is. I've never met Sam before. So we hired all these great off-the-field coaches. But none of it matters if the coaching you're paying a lot of money for is not great, okay? So you look at the game yesterday where the coaching was not great at all in certain aspects. So at all is hyperbolizing. So I have never seen this before. I have never seen a team do this. And it's honestly a very simple fix. And I could get into specific ways you can fix this. But four separate times on fourth and short this season in the SEC, we have had a false start penalty. Four separate times. Arkansas yesterday, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, and Alabama. It's happened four separate times. How? How does that happen? How? It's crazy to me. The wide receiver rotations were weird. We had to blow a non-time saving at the end of the second half timeout yesterday for that. So, you know, it's not necessarily a shot at Frank Wilson. It's hard to fix all of that. But it's also one of those things where this stuff has happened all season. Very specific things that you could point to. So there's a piece of me that thinks, hey, we really do need to clean house. We really do need to bring in some brand new bodies, okay? Let's go to Sibley. He says LSU is going all guns for Lane Kiffin. Sibley says, what kind of recruiter is he? All right, so let's start with the beginning of this. Once again, Sibley, thank you for your generosity. I'm sorry if you went to Athens for the game, Sibley. Of course, a big Texas muckety-muck. Dude, I adore Kirby Smart and Mike Bobo. Dude, they are so good. And Arch Manning played good yesterday. I'm a Manning boy. God, I felt bad for Texas because Arch was throwing dots. He's actually starting to play well, and Texas receivers forgot how to catch a football. What the heck? But, you know, for me, Lane is a great recruiter. Now, as far as high school recruiting, it's not that great, but he's at Ole Miss, where you're splitting kids down the middle. Pause. That's kind of grotesque. With Mississippi State, and you're also losing kids to LSU and then all of that. But Lane's understanding of the transfer portal and how to interact with these kids is very important. He is very, like, this is a business now. Don't think of college football the way it used to be kind of coach. I'm telling you what you need to know about your role on this team. Okay? I think that great recruiters become great coaches. Saban called himself a great recruiter and motivator, not a great coach. But Kiffin is more of a scheme guy. All right, he is more of a scheme guy. The offense would be fixed, though. All right? Let's go to Ellie Mom, who follows up on our super chat from earlier. I know you know I have never been sold on Cortez Hankton. Why is he still here? All right. I'll address this briefly. So I reached out to a pretty high-level Georgia person. All right. So this person is national. I think a lot of you would know the name. And I reached out to him when Cortez was initially hired because it was such a bizarre move. He had just won a national championship with Georgia. And, you know, it's not bizarre in the sense that he was coming back home, but he got a huge pay raise to come here, and he's making just south of $1 million. And his family has benefited quite a bit being at LSU, all right, with the sibling on the staff, okay? So, yeah, the wide receiver rotations have been strange. There's probably a reason for it that we don't know. But what I can tell you is our resource allocation at wide receiver didn't really make a lot of sense to me. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, Berrion Brown's been a really good addition. Like, Berrion has really made our offense better. But, you know, if I am at LSU and I'm going into the portal to get a wide receiver, I'm doing my best to get, like, the absolute best of the best. Because normally, at LSU, wide receiver kind of figures itself out. So they got Nick Anderson so I can have a bigger body in there, and Nick's not had a good season, and he's hurt right now. And a lot of this is Garrett, and a lot of this is the play calling, and so on and so on. So what we learned about the LSU offense this season is, and I've always felt this way to a certain degree, is that it is a little too easy to just criticize a position coach for when a unit is struggling, all right? So good example of this is Oklahoma. So Bill Bindebo is the Oklahoma offensive line coach. He is arguably the most well-respected offensive line coach in college football. That unit was terrible last year. Terrible with a capital T. They were probably up there with the worst offensive line, not only in the SEC, maybe in the entire Power Four. Okay? Did he just magically become a bad coach? Same thing kind of happened to Alex Atkins last year at Florida State. Well, what happened? Well, quarterback went sour and the play calling went sour. So Oklahoma fixed it. They went and got a big-time quarterback and a better OC, And then Florida State fixed it. They changed quarterback systems. They got Gus in. And, you know, both have been better. Florida State's obviously not been that, obviously been that great. And then at the same time, Oklahoma's been not really that elite offensively. But Oklahoma's offensive line's been fixed. They were really good, to me, in the Alabama game. All right. There were times when they had their faces caved in, but it's Alabama on the road at night. So, for me, I think with position coaches, they do, when things go bad, receive too much of the blame. And when things go great, they probably receive so too much praise. Now, the reason that's important is if position coaches don't really move the needle as much as we think that they do, why do they make the money that they make? And if you've been a PHL fan for quite some time, there's a piece of me that wants to be a coach, right? Not only because I love football and I do film studies and there's nothing more I love than football. They make good money. Okay. And obviously I wouldn't be at that level, but most high school coaches make more money in a year than I do. Okay. Even position coaches. So, you know, it's a good job to have. It's a really good job to have. But P4 position coaches used to get paid the way that they got paid because of recruiting. Now that the recruiting is, hey, what are you paying me? Those two things are things working against each other, right? Because theoretically, the money that you could be paying a position coach could be going to a player. Let's go to Cultured Neon. This dude is from Arkansas, folks. Don't listen to this crap. Okay. That's cool. Cultured Neon, who I've never seen before. Yeah, so I went to high school in Arkansas. My wife's from Arkansas. I'm proud of it. I have a lot of friends at Arkansas. And, my entire family is in Baton Rouge. So, sure. But I have a question for you, Culture Neon. And you might be. I don't know. Did you go to LSU? Did you graduate from LSU? Have you dedicated your entire professional career to covering this team? And I'd say my entire, it's not my entire thing. I have a good NFL channel, good SEC channel, but this is, you know, what I do. But I don't mind a personal shot. But just know, if you want to get personal with me, I'm here for it, baby. Let's go to Darren on Facebook. Having fun on the beach, listening to some Kenny Chesney. That's some beach music for you. Or what is the ultimate beach artist? You know, when I think beach, I don't think Jimmy Buffett. I think most people think Jimmy Buffett when they think beach. You know what song I think of immediately when I think of the beach? For some reason, it is Jagged Edge, Where the Party At. I always think of that song when I'm on the beach. The problem is I'm not on the beach that often. But when I'm on the beach, I want to be getting litty as a nipple. That's how lit I like to be on a beach. So Darren says, I personally wouldn't mind Kelvin Shepard. Sure. How's he doing on Sunday Night Football? I don't know. I don't have the game on. I'm locked in. Matthew says ultimate beach artist is Pitbull. You know what's interesting? I actually do have quite a few sources in Arkansas. I had lunch before the season with some Arkansas boosters, and they're big supporters of the SEC channel. And when the SEC channel started getting going, especially with Arkansas content, I never said I was from Arkansas. I was just doing the film studies like I do for LSU. I don't go too deep into Arkansas like I do LSU. But I will say, I want to shout out, because we have some SEC commenters in here right now. I want to shout out Georgia, Oklahoma. Those have been the two biggest, in Tennessee and Arkansas. There's a fifth that's been blowing me up lately, but I can't shout them out on here. Okay. Let's go to Chance. He wants to talk about the North Texas coach. Tari wants to talk about Fran Brown. We'll talk about both of those young men, and they are both young. After a quick break, thanks to our friends. Elabort Therapy.
Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LabordTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LabordTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LabordTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their five locations all throughout the Lafayette region.
PHL Nation, it's time to lock in and get serious really quickly with our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast and FortifiedGulf.com. This is my buddy Ramey. He is one of many Fortified Gulf Coast inspection professionals that are doing something to help you not only save your home, but your memories.
The Fortified program got started about 13 years ago. We adopted it here in New Orleans about 2.5 years ago. It's a more advanced way of doing the roof. It adds an extra layer of protection, whereas even if a hurricane was to pull the shingles off this roof, water will still not get into the house.
So yes, your establishment is important, but what about the things you can't replace? That family scrapbook or that painting that's been handed down from Meemaw to Papaw and to you? It is important to protect that today with Fortified Roofing. And while this seems like a priceless asset, did you know it can actually save you on your homeowner's insurance up to 37% if you are in South Louisiana? Just call the number 504-444-7563. That's 504-444-7563, or visit fortifiedgulf.com. That's FortifiedGulf.com. All righty, let's go with Fran Brown, Syracuse head coach from the SEC, a Kirby Smart disciple, a man that has dealt with rejection. I got chills when he was talking about being rejected for the Temple job. And, you know, Fran Brown is a very talented coach. You're definitely going to win a lot of press conferences with him. You know, it's you can't really judge what's happened to Syracuse this season because their quarterback got hurt. Now, obviously, there's an LSU connection to that. They went out and got Ricky Collins in the transfer portal. And Ricky got there, and they're like, we made a mistake. So they went and got Steve Angeli out of Notre Dame, and he was really good. He was a really, really, really good quarterback. Another LSU connection, ironically, Greg McElroy compared Steve to Joe Burrow. That was a real thing that happened. And I like Greg, but kind of strange. Anyway, Steve was really good, though. He was a really, really, really good quarterback for Syracuse, and he gets hurt. So Fran Brown's season is gone not the way that we thought it was going to go. And then, obviously, last year's team was really good with the Kyle McCord at quarterback. So he understands, even though he's a defensive guy, he gets quarterback right a lot. His team has been rated in the portal. They lost a really good DT that we were after, and they've lost some other good pieces. They lost their best receiver to Penn State. So, you know, he's talked about, you know, the modern NIL and all that stuff, and, you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing. You know, I tend to lean offensive in my head coaching hire, but I will also tell you that there is a growing sentiment that teams want to get a defensive-minded head coach. And they want that defensive-minded head coach to get that young hotshot offensive coordinator. College football is a copycat league, All right. Offensive minded coaches, in theory, are going to be more expensive because it is the more important side of the football. But you look at college football right now, who's the best coach? It's Kirby Smart. He's the best coach. He's a defensive minded guy. Mike Elko will probably win coach of the year. He got OC right, and he's good. He's a really good coach. So Fran Brown, obviously, he's a defensive side of the football guy. It wouldn't be the worst thing. It really would not. Okay. Guitar George, thank you so much. Let's go to Eric Morse, the North Texas coach, who's probably not number one on LSU's list. Yard per play numbers are really good. You know, just for reference, North Texas's offense is a lot of fun to watch. And they're playing a quarterback who didn't have a single start in high school. And they're making it work. They're just a good team. They're a fun team to watch. They play fast. It would be a very, I guess you could say, fun offense for wide receivers to come play in. And, you know, we never have issues with recruiting wide receivers, even when our offense was prehistoric. But Eric Morse would, for the most part, fix that side of the football. It's just, once again, you're getting a coach from a non-P4 level, and he's not the actual guy that everybody wants at the non-P4 level. Well, who are the non-P4 coaches that truly are the elite names? Well, John Summerall's one, and then Alex Golsh is probably the other at USF. And then there's a third that most would consider not to be a fit. I don't really give a damn about fit. Ryan Silverfield. Okay. This is a really, really, really good coach for the Memphis Tigers. Guy just knows how to put together a team. I mean, there's just no other way around it. The issue with that is Memphis is probably the best group of four program, maybe outside of Boise State and maybe a few others. So, you know, other coaches have won at Memphis. That would be something you could poke holes into as far as him being the next coach. Okay. Now, here's what we're going to do. In the next 5 to 10 to 15 minutes, I'm going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. We normally have the great Blake Ruffino on Sunday nights. I didn't want to because if my internet got choppy, because I am on the road, I wouldn't have wanted him to be in the awkward spot because, you know, I'm on the road. I don't have my good internet, but this internet's worked fine, or at least I think I've looked okay during the stream. Come to find out, I start the live stream. Monty said, hey, I got the highest internet just not too long ago. So if I had known that earlier, I would have had Blake on tonight. But we'll try and get him on this week. Let's go to Sean. He is a Memphis fan too. Silverfield is not the solution. Okay. You know, the thing, Sean, that would interest quite a few people is, as far as Silverfield is concerned, he knows how to coach offensive line. And, you know, with Brian Kelly, when he came in, that was a position that, you know, Notre Dame has arguably been the best at over the past decade, which is offensive line play. And BK has not done a good job coaching that group. Okay. Let's go to Blake. Any actual names being circulated, not just hearsay? Great question. Now, listen, Blake, since you super chatted, I'm always going to be completely honest with you. I am not high enough on the totem pole to know the specific names that LSU is going after. Okay. I'm not Pete Thamel, or I'm not obviously Virg Ausberry or anyone like that. What I can tell you, though, is LSU is in the mindset that they're still that BAMF program. And they should have that mindset. They should. We're going to go get the absolute best guy. So what does that mean exactly when I say that? They're not going to mind going big game hunting, and they're also not going to mind paying up yet again for another big name coach. Even though we have heard what we have heard from Jeff Landry. So what does that mean? Well, at LSU, every name should be on the table outside of, you know, the names that make no sense for them to come here. And for me, those names are probably only three or four names, right? Which is DeBoer, Smart, Day. They're at the three best programs. And then obviously there's a few others that don't make a lot of sense to me. But I think LSU is interested in kicking the tires on Marcus Freeman and whoever else that's out there. I will also tell you that we'll get to Alexander Super Chat. You never messaged me, Alexander. I wanted to meet you at the game. There was actually quite a few PHL legends at the game yesterday that did not tell me they were going. Brian Turner, who I think is in the chat right now. Okay. Do I think the portal wide receivers were unnecessary? It all comes down to price. Yes and no. But you know that there was bigger fish to fry. Okay. But the truth is, if you want to be brutally honest, it's borderline statistically improbable that LSU could not produce on their own one decent non-transfer starting offensive lineman. Like, literally, it is nearly impossible for LSU to not find at least one. So that means you have to exclude Braylon Moore, who has a case for being all SEC, as crazy as that sounds. He won't get it, but he's got an outside case for it. He's been good. Josh Thompson has been fine to me. All right, there's a metric, or there's an analytic company called Teamworks, and Teamworks has viewed Josh Thompson relatively favorably. Okay. You know, I don't really care about the transfer offensive lineman. I really don't. Like, when it comes to this conversation, I care a lot about him because we would be maybe a zero-win team if we didn't have those two. But it is wild that Brian Kelly and Brad Davis recruited the offensive line better than it's ever been recruited before. And there's not a single high school offensive lineman that is doing anything for us at a good level. Now, Cohen Echols has had his moments. Tyree Adams was the best. He was a year three guy. He got hurt, but it was still kind of a mixed bag. Once again, true freshman offensive lineman for me, you got to give them grace with Kerryus Kern. But it's crazy to me that that happened. Like, I would feel I could walk into any program in America and there'd be at least one good high school offensive lineman on the team. But there's another side of it. Let's go to a team that notoriously has bad offensive linemen, and that is Vanderbilt. All right, so Vanderbilt's offensive line has been graded poorly by PFF, but they're still a great team because Pavia makes it work. And they're coached really well. Clark Lee has raised the level of play. The Clark Lee, Jerry Kill mindset. Blake, I would love to put your comment on the stream, but that is probably the single most graphic comment I've ever received on PHL. And I want to put it up on the screen because I would go viral. But at the same time, I would literally lose every single partner I've ever had on this channel. On a Sunday stream, on the Lord's Day, you would bring that up. Now, Blake, you do whatever floats your boat. I think there's something you're probably saying about yourself when you're saying that aloud. You decided to type that on a United States YouTube channel in 2025. Well, actually, in 2025, we're more accepting of that, thankfully. But whatever you want to do with your life, you do it. Okay, I'm not going to make this that kind of chat, but that is the wildest comment I think I've ever seen on here. And I've seen some crazy ones doing this in the last five seasons. There's no need to apologize. It's just, you know, there's kids watching. Like, we don't want, let's go to Alexander. LSU should never have to go in the portal for a wide receiver. No? I won't go that far. Because look, you look at Alabama, Ryan Williams is their best wide receiver, right? No, it's Jeremy Bernard. That's their best wide receiver. I didn't think he was going to be what he is. He's a transfer from Washington. So, yeah, you know, with LSU's history of wide receivers, you know, you would like to think that we would never have to do that. But here we go. Okay. Now, do you want to bring up something? Hate to say this. Hate to say this. Okay. But so much of what we're going to be doing the next couple of weeks is going to be the coaching search. So much of it. Okay. Like I said, I love reporting on it. I love talking about it. But it's not actual football. We still have two more games left to go. Blake says, you know you love. Well, yeah, I love everybody on here. Just might not be the love that you're looking for. And if you're looking for that kind of love, Blake, I want to wish you your best of luck in your endeavors. Whatever you might be looking for in love. But you know, I'm really excited about these next two games. I really am. We have a chance to play playoff spoiler. All right. So take a look at this. Oklahoma really needs to win these final two games to make sure that they get into the playoff. We have a lot better shot of beating Oklahoma than I think a lot of us are giving ourselves credit for. All right. So Oklahoma's strength is their defense. Well, our offense sucks. Our defense is our strength, and Oklahoma's offense is not that great. They're not. Okay. So, you know, Oklahoma has a quarterback that can move. Their backup can also move. But I think we could play the role of playoff spoiler for Oklahoma in that final week of the season. There's one stat that has always helped me, and it's yard per play differential. You know, we were a negative 0.6 in yard per play differential offensively versus Arkansas yesterday. That's not really that good. Like, normally you lose if there's a yard per play differential like that. But another thing I look at is play differential. So Oklahoma gets a lot of these pick sixes, right? The downside of a pick six is your defense has to go right back on the field. So Oklahoma's had a lot of these defensive touchdowns. They've also kicked a lot of long field goals. So what does that mean? They don't go for it a lot on fourth down. They could be a little bit more conservative. They can go three and out more often after turnovers and all of that and still score. So when you factor all of that in, what happens? Your play discrepancy gets crazy. So, look, I'll pull it up for you right now. Oklahoma Sooners 2025 game log, and I'll show you this right here, okay? So this is via sportsreference.com, and we're going to get into some of these PFF grades, okay? So I know we're in a look-ahead spot. We shouldn't look ahead of Western Kentucky. Could Western Kentucky actually give us a game? I actually think they can. But you take a look at this. Alabama, the Oklahoma offense ran 51 plays. Their defense ran 75 plays. A 24-play discrepancy. The week before versus Tennessee, their defense ran 80 plays. Offensively, they ran 64. And then the week before, in a loss versus Ole Miss ran 87 plays. Their offense ran 60. So you've had a 27-play discrepancy. You've had this discrepancy here, 64. That's 16 plays. And then you have another 24-play discrepancy here. So 27, 16, 24. So what's happened to Oklahoma? Well, their best player's hurt right now, R. Mason Thomas. It doesn't matter because they got a gazillion best players. Kip Lewis is the real deal at linebacker. But they're going to play Missouri. And this was part of why LSU's schedule set up so nicely for them. Is that, yes, this game would be on the road. It's probably going to be cold. But Oklahoma's going to be tired when they play us. And we got a gimme game this weekend. So we'll see. That's a good line. If I ain't going, I'm going to be sure you're sitting here by me. That is so funny. So Michael Van Buren does not turn the football over. All right. One final thing on Brian Kelly. And I've shared this before, but not really like into deep detail because you hear this from players and all of this. One thing Brian Kelly is really good at all of his stops is inter-coach staff beef. A lot of his staffs have had coaches who just, quite frankly, do not get along. And this is probably one of the more visceral disagreements on the staff was between Jamar Cain and Matt House. It was very, 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 very tough, if you will. All right. I talk to Jamar Cain every now and then. We used to talk on Instagram. And very, very, very good coach. You know, the Broncos have good players on their front, but they don't have Myles Garrett. And they've had the best pass rush in the NFL. Okay. I do want to show you this because I do think you might see more of this. Jamar Cain, I remember when House said I was very average. Nah, he's a clown. And then, of course, the Broncos played the Chiefs earlier this year. There's been a lot of that. All right, there was definitely some of that with the offensive coaching staff with Sloan. Okay, so we take a look at the PFF grades. I highly recommend getting a PFF subscription. And Harlan Berry was the highest graded LSU Tiger. Not really a shock. I felt watching the game, I was watching a special running back performance, and all three of the LSU running backs were the best players. And then your fourth was has also played running back this year, and Xavion Thomas. Michael Van Buren, 69.7 grade. which was good. I think that's about where I would have him. I might have actually graded him a little bit more favorably. PFF normally grades your quarterbacks a little bit higher than one would think. Once again, our offensive line didn't grade out terribly outside of the tackles. But, you know, it is what it is. Ori Williams actually had a good pass blocking grade. But, you know, Ori had some tough run blocking reps, which is to be expected with a 6'7 tight end with a long torso. Okay, it's just simple physics when it comes to leverage. Okay. Cohen Echols had a 90.8 pass blocking grade. That is beyond elite. Let me go to the defensive grades here. And CJ Jackson got that sack. Good for him. Mansoor Delane got a 72 grade. I don't know why that's not higher. Okay, run defense, whatever. But Delane was obviously special. Harold Perkins got a low grade from PFF, 60.6 overall. The thing about PFF grades, though, is you do need to look at them differently from a play-to-play basis and a splash play basis, right? Harold Perkins made two ginormous splash plays in this game. Then, of course, the down-to-down stuff is a little bit different. Yeah, MVB had some good turnover luck yesterday. That's a good point by Chance. You also have to keep this in mind as well. You did play Arkansas yesterday, all right? This is the most cursed team I have ever seen. Like, they will invent new ways to lose. And yesterday, in terms of heartbreak for Arkansas fans, losing the rivalry game that they care about more than anyone else is not even top five in the past year for them. In this past calendar year, it's not even a top five heartbreak for them. Okay. They have, it's uncanny how cursed they are. And, you know, it's just something that they got to live with. And I cannot tell you how many times I've thought about our shortstop, Milam, grounding to their shortstop, Wahiva Aloy. And you just turn a 6'4" double play, can't do it. They had the best softball player in America. Can't make the World Series. They're up by a gazillion versus Texas Tech in basketball last year with the Hall of Fame coach. Choked that lead away. All right, I mean, you can't even fathom what that fan base has gone through. Can't even fathom. So part of our win yesterday was Arkansas being Arkansas. You do have to factor that in. All right. It's not quite the same in baseball because we knew our baseball team was elite last year. Alexander says Harold Perkins is going to have a Danielle Hunter NFL career. Better in the NFL than at LSU. Yeah, I do think there is a slight difference in that. In Hunter's case, he has a defined position. He was a defensive end. Hand in the dirt defensive end. So Perk's going to have to find the position that fits him best in the NFL. Another thing is Harold Perkins was at times elite in college. Danielle Hunter was never that. There you go. Yeah. Go check it out on the SEC channel. I did it. You can now collaborate on some of these stuff. So I put it on the SEC and the LSU channel, my breakdown from yesterday. But if you're interested, film breakdowns are already up for Oklahoma and John Mateer, Tennessee versus New Mexico State. We've already done Taylen Green, of course. And we did Ty Simpson's film study a little bit earlier today. Beezy, what's good, bro? You know, one thing, I love when a player proves me wrong. So, you know, I do a lot of Georgia film studies. I did not think Zachariah Branch would be as good as he's been. Now, if you go look at his stat sheet, it's not like crazy. But Zachariah Branch is so damn good. It's kind of like Aaron Anderson, where you look at Aaron Anderson's stats last year. It doesn't look like ridiculous, but if you actually watch the games, you're like, Aaron Anderson was ridiculous. And the same thing is true with, like, Zachariah Branch. And I thought, man, he was overrated coming over from USC. But, you know, it goes back to the star ranking systems. They normally are getting these things right. Larry says, I'm okay with Blake Baker as a head coach. Well, that'd be a crazy situation, you know. Do you know what? Okay, wait. So did the Browns win today? I was locked into doing the MVB film study. Okay, no, they didn't win. Pulling for old Shadur. But I did see Shadur got in. And I'm not really a huge Shadur guy. But I'll pull for him. I like a good story. I just don't like when people talk about Shadur, their brains like melt and turn into mush. So he didn't play well. I got to, y'all want me to do an NFL film study? I got to do a Mahomes one when I'm done with this. Patrick Mahomes, dude, I love watching him play. It's kind of a hate watch because I never really was a Mahomes guy. Tony coming in hot, Coach Klein. So I'm guessing you're bringing up Texas A&M's Colin Klein. Or you might be talking about, ironically, Chris Kleiman at Kansas State, where Colin Klein played. But I think you're mentioning Colin Klein of Texas A&M. He's good. He's a really good play caller. I know for one thing, he is going to for sure have a dual threat quarterback. Oh, Shadur was 4 of 16? You know, another reason I'm cheering for the Browns is, I don't know if you guys have been seeing this on Twitter. It's kind of like, for my old schoolers, it's tough to watch because this guy was such a cult hero. during your time period. But Bernie Kosar is having a lot of health issues, and he's been documenting it on Twitter. And Bernie's like just the nicest guy. I got to have a brief interaction with him not too long ago. And his spirit is just so, 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 so good. So I'm kind of rooting for the Browns because he's like diehard Browns. Like just through and through. Peyton Houston this season, 4,224 total yards, 48 total touchdowns. Crazy. Look at Calvin Shepard making stuff happen. Let's go, Shep. Peyton Houston and Lane Kiffin offense? How about that? Chance, it would make a lot of sense if they made that move, yes. Josh Allen was great today. I did see something really sad in the NFL today. I'm not going to bring it up. I will bring it up in the Discord. How about it? And it does involve LSU. When ticket prices increase? Well, yeah, I mean, that they're going to increase. I mean, they've already announced an increase. So I'm glad they did it before BK got fired. You want to know? You want to know something that's making me, I wouldn't say be uncomfortable, if you will, but I have long believed that the college football playoff should not be the SEC Invitational. I'm going to save a good bit of this conversation for the Tuesday night stream. Before we sign off, once again, big thanks to Sibley. He's our top super chatter. Guitar George Blake letting us know more about him than we would like to admit. Julie always showing love, Alexander, and so many other super chatters and supporters and all that stuff. Okay. So, you know, I don't want the college football playoff to be the SEC Invitational, even though it helps LSU in a major way. We are not Georgia. We're not Alabama. We need as much help as we can get into a playoff. And I could definitely see in the near future where LSU is the seventh best team in the SEC, and they're better than the third best team in the Big Ten, and they deserve to get in, but you know, because the Big Ten's softer, they get in with losses and all of that. I'm fine with the third best Big Ten team getting in over the seventh best SEC team or whatever. Okay. I'm fine with that. But, God, dude, Jahmyr Gibbs had a crazy run. It's insane. But I'm fine with that. I really am. But it is getting harder. It is getting harder. And part of that is because I don't think the Big Ten at their stronger programs has the coaching that they need at this point. You know, Penn State was a colossal failure this year. I don't think a lot of Michigan fans are happy with the Sharon Moore right now. There are some other giants in that program that are in that conference that I think could be something. So, you know, with the SEC, it does seem to me that this conference is way better than the Big Ten this year. It just feels that way. All right. So, you know, Oklahoma handled, for the most part, Michigan. It was a competitive game, but there really wasn't a time in that game in the second half where you're like, okay, Oklahoma's not winning this game. How good is Oklahoma? Well, they're good. They're a two-loss team in the SEC. But in actuality, I would probably say Oklahoma is the fifth or sixth best team in the SEC. I think Ole Miss is better. Even though Tennessee lost to Oklahoma, I think Tennessee's better. I think Alabama's better. I think Georgia's better. So, Texas beat them straight up. You know, it's a weird thing for me because I don't want the SEC to ever get seven teams in a playoff because that means half of the conference is getting into a national playoff field in the game of football. I don't know if I want that. I don't know if I want that. Okay. Great healthy live tonight. Great healthy live. All right, y'all. I will see you on Tuesday night. That'll be our next live stream. We will have a Michael Van Buren film study up tomorrow at 6 p.m. Central, okay? It is Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight we are doing some air fryer catfish, Cajun catfish with TT. Let's go. And I cannot state this enough. I really appreciate seeing so many of you yesterday at the game. It was so much fun. Me and Cliff, we had so much fun with every single one of you. And yeah, let's go.